Dr. Brian Lee, how are you, brother?
Chris, I'm great. So happy to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the program. We were at the Westminster Conference the other day, and I saw you, and I said, I've got to grab this guy for the program. He's here. And this is one of the nice things about living down here is we get a lot of stream of guys coming through.
People pass through.
And I can pull them into the podcast. So, but anyways.
Well, Washington, D.C. is like that a little bit, too, but they're different kind of people.
I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But good to have you here. I wanted to talk a little bit today, at least introduce some of our listeners to you. I know how long have you been in DC again as a church?
I moved there about 20 years ago.
Okay.
And I didn't move there to plant a church. Right. I worked in the government for a number of years,
right.
But we began a church plant with the Bible study in 2007.
And right.
We had our first worship service the Sunday after Reformation Day, 2007. So
right.
16 plus years coming up on 17.
Right. So for our listeners, Brian's a fellow minister in the United Reformed Churches of North America. It's been good to get to know you over the years. I never overlapped with you and Sim. You were before me.
You were kind of that
rugged class that came before us. But it's good to have you. So I thought today we could talk a little bit about church planning.
Yeah.
And I see guys that are intensely interested in this. I'm interested in this. I always felt when I went into the ministry, I didn't feel the pull to that.
Yeah.
I always felt like I was kind of wired to go into an established church. I was young when I first went in, 27. Felt like I needed really strong elders around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized with church planners, at times you're kind of taking this thing all up yourself and trying to find good elders, right, to come in and help. But I thought maybe you could tell a little bit first biographically about you, your background.
Yeah.
You've done doctoral studies. Tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll get into some of the church planning stuff.
Well, I've jokingly called myself an accidental church planter before because, like you, I wasn't drawn to it. I mean, I was drawn to academics, mm-hmm. and I came to Westminster, and then I went and did doctoral work with Richard Muller in historical theology, the history of development of covenant theology in the Reformed tradition. And I loved that stuff, and I was on the academic job market, and like many people, it's a tough market.
Yeah.
And plan B for me, for friends and personal interest. I was interested in politics and public policy.
Yeah.
One of those 2K guys who actually enjoys politics. Imagine that. And so I went to DC, where I had friends, and I worked there for a number of years. Legislative branch, executive branch, didn't quite get to the judicial branch, but I was in the Justice Department for a little while. And so I had a lot of experience there. And it was really my experience living in DC, mm-hmm. Realizing I wasn't called to government service. And also looking out at a church landscape that while there were a number of good churches, mm-hmm. there wasn't a confessionally reformed continental church.
Right.
There wasn't churches like so many in our tradition that was liturgical, sacramental. Mm-hmm. And, my view of church planting, especially like URCs in the light of our sister churches in the PCA, OPC, mm-hmm. other Presbyterian bodies, is, the Reformation is a harmony of voices.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a richness that comes from the Heidelberg Catechism, that comes from the Belgic Confession. Mm-hmm. And we're at our best when we're working together with these guys.
Right. Right.
And especially, in the city itself, it was at that time a wasteland. It's gotten better.
Sure.
And this was, within 10 years of when Mark Dever had arrived there. So he was doing wonderful things in the Baptist world.
Right.
On Capitol Hill. But in terms of confessionally reformed presence in the city, it was practically zero.
Yeah. Yeah. What an opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think are the Presbyterian Reformed churches historically, at least in America, that we have been, in terms of mission, in terms of, we support a lot of causes.
Yeah.
And I always thought, we should be aiming at the church plants, aiming at planning churches. Do you think we've, and I'm not asking you to indict all the Presbyterian Reformed churches here with this question, but do you think we've been strong at this? Do you think this is something that we've given proper attention to? I'm just curious what your thought is on that, because I always feel somewhat guilty. I've got an established church.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of things we're doing here. We support a lot of causes. We pray for the welfare of the city. We do all these things, but I always feel like we leave the church planning and at least the church planners out in the dust a bit.
Yeah, back to another reason why I felt called to plant this church,
mm-hmm.
Just to be a little bit more granular. I remember coming out of church services, fine church services, where I just thought, our preaching of the word is not robust. And we have a unique vision here at Westminster Seminary.
Yeah, right.
We've learned in terms of redemptive historical law and gospel, mm-hmm. this idea of promise and fulfillment.
Yeah.
It's so unique and it's so beautiful. And I went into a number of really wonderful churches in DC where there were incredibly powerful intellectual people, and they would go into church on Sunday and be fed sort of gruel.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of weak inspirational stuff, moralistic stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll be honest, I thought it would be easy to plant a church because I thought everything that I love so much about what I learned here.
Everyone else would too, right?
And that's that old problem the problem of the person who wants to communicate a message knows it too well.
Yeah.
And loves it too well to understand what they have to bridge to bring it to people. And I thought there would be a big appetite for it, but it's not. And this is the sense in which the pastors, ministers as pastors, you lead people. You know, when you put food out for an animal, they're drawn to it.
Right.
Right. And so there's a push and pull to healthy preaching. And I think what we have done poorly, and I think sort of what, you know, we discussed a little bit about talking about today is I think what we've done poorly is thinking strategically about what are the ingredients. Every church plant is a unique thing, but what are the ingredients and is it where the infrastructure that we can build that can, as you say, support and come around church planters and make this difficult work, inherently uncertain work,
right?
Our ecclesiology, you know, we have a lifetime call to the ministry.
Yeah.
How do you call a guy lifetime to a work that might close its doors in 3 to 5 years.
And to recognize going in, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
One of our sister churches brought an overture. I think we brought it to Synod. It didn't go there, but we've sort of adopted it in our classes. When you call a church planter, that letter of call should include what happens in the case the plant closes down.
Yeah.
How are we going to care for these people?
Yeah.
Because you know, there's a certain level. We organized in 2016, started the work in 2007. So there were 9 years where we had oversight.
Right.
And then, but even since 2016, in many ways, we aren't an established church. You know, there's still uncertainty. Yeah. And so sustainability is a different thing from organization.
Right.
Because you can organize as a church with a handful of officers, maybe still on the line with budget issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there, you know, there's a way that we can, I think, come around and do a better job launching these men well and launching the works well.
Right. Do you, so, you know, I'm here in Westminster Country, right down the street. I get a lot of students coming over and they're interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered if we do it somewhat backward. I recognize, you know, when I was young, what I needed, I felt, was an established church, but that was sort of backward to the thinking of the church at the time. Mm-hmm. What mature church wants to take a 27-year-old kid and take that risk on him, right?
Yeah.
You could probably close an established church pretty easily with that kind of guy. But, you know, you think about a lot of these guys want to go in, they're young, they're ambitious, they're excited about it, but they have no idea what's coming. They have no idea the difficulty of this. I've always wondered, are we putting guys too young into this? Shouldn't it be older men who have had some established training and have at least been in the ministry for some period of time to take on a church planting work? I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, I remember back when I was starting and we started a committee in our classes, 2008, 2009, it was up and running. I didn't start that committee, but someone spoke into that committee's discussion saying that in the Christian Reformed Church, it was the case, at least in the past, that they wouldn't send a man until he had had a call to an established church.
Right.
I don't know how that was formulated, whether it was just common practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big proponent of internships, and I think there are very poor on-ramps into ministry from seminary into life of the church in the URC because of our history of sole pastors.
Right.
Without assistants, without associates in so many of our churches. So young guys coming out of seminary have small vacant churches, very few assistant pastor positions to move into to say grow and develop, not enough internships. And so I think a lot of young guys feel called to the mission field or to church planting because it's a job option. And
yeah, I think that's right.
And that's one of many ways that I think our view of church planting is planter-centered and not church-centered in the sense that, oh, Fred has a call to, you know, Oklahoma City, or someone has a passion here. And I'm the, like, my my proposed book, we were joking, is how not to plant a church or how not to plant a reformed church, because every chapter is a mistake I've made.
Yeah.
And in D.C., I and some friends looked around. So we had a small group of folks, but we looked around and we saw a need. And it was totally grassroots. We reached out then to a church and said, could we do a work here? How could we oversee it? And that's going to happen sometimes. Lots of caveats here. Every church plant is going to be different. And sometimes that'll go. But I think when you do get that guy with a vision or a desire, it's important early on to harness him to an overseeing church that invests in him and that isn't hasty.
Yeah.
It takes time to develop a plan.
Right. I think that's so important.
That overseeing church really owns that work.
Yeah. Because some of these guys I've seen, there wasn't strategy. It's absolutely correct. They go in, they want a job.
Yeah.
That's how they, that's how they view this. They got a family to take care of. Yeah. They're worried about this coming out of seminary. So they go into these small plants. I know I can think of at least two or three guys I've known since I've been here. It didn't work.
Yeah.
And then they become really disillusioned and frustrated, with the church at large, the lack of strategy, the lack of support. And I just don't think they were quite prepared for that. And I don't think we did a good job in strategy of placing them or helping them.
And
in
I want to be really clear. I don't think the church is letting them down after the fact.
Right.
I think we're letting them down by not having a structure, a vision for this in the front end.
Yeah.
And so in one sense, we go to the church and say, why aren't you supporting these guys? Well, they went out and did some foolish things. And I'm not putting that on them. I'm putting that on the overseeing church. And
pull your mic up.
No one ever told me to get closer to a mic before. That's a first.
Well,
Just back off.
You can do that here. These SMBs, you kind of got to get up into them for them to have the effect. But that's what I had Mark Stromberg on here. And you know what? I didn't need the mic near him. Have you ever heard his voice? So, but anyways, I think you're right. I guess I was thinking, with some of these guys, especially when it comes to finance, they're all this burden sort of falls on them to finance the work. And then the churches, we recently started here a needy church fund, planting fund in Southwest to help churches, right? That wasn't in place for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think that encourages them, but it also promotes accountability. But it creates it's created for them a struggle because then they feel like they're always begging for money.
Yeah. Well, one of my jobs in D.C. was director of congressional affairs for the National Endowment for the Humanities, and we'd go to Capitol Hill and defend our annual budget, such as it was. And there's a saying in D.C., budget is policy. Mm-hmm. This is the old Christian adage. You want to know where a man's heart is, look at his checkbook.
Yeah.
A checkbook is a thing, listeners, that you used to write and give money by giving a piece of paper.
Yeah, what's that?
dated reference. But and so I think it's so true. One of the biggest mistakes I made in my haste was, someone said, I said, where do you get funding for this? I want to do this. They said, okay, you can do this. Where do you get funding? Well, just write a letter to the churches. They'll send money. And so I read a letter to all the URC churches, and I only knew one or two of the churches well. And of course, only those two churches responded. And so I'm like, well, we're doing this no matter what. And I went out and I did it bivocationally.
Right.
And again, there might be a time and a place for bivocational ministry, but I think instead of half a man, we should send two men, which is what our URC has advocated for, at least since 2001, the last time Synod was here in Escondido.
Right.
And I don't know that we've ever done it once. And
we rarely have two men in large churches. So, and I think it's an entirely different thing to send two men out for a plant. It's similar, but different. Means of grace, obviously the same. But the strategy that has to come into that, the work that has to go in that, you have to have a footman on the ground really getting out to the people.
Yeah, I think we have a vision, and I've heard this explicitly articulated before, like the pastoral need, the need for pastoral manpower goes in a linear way with the number of people. Well, if you have 15 people, you don't need, it's easy to care for 15 people, right? But the whole thing is that church planter, his job is to reach the people that aren't in the church.
I know.
And that's a totally different task. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, another bucket of challenge for our church planting is his job is to train leaders, and often to train leaders from scratch, guys who didn't grow up in the URC.
Right.
And so our culture of leadership, of elders and deacons, is something that has to be taught. And as you know, it's mostly caught in our circles.
Right.
And so it's actually inverse. The work is harder, more labor intensive at the front end. And so I foolishly did that with a full-time day job Yeah. I didn't even have a well thought out bivocational plan.
Right.
And that's where you just need to slow down. And the path of wisdom, as you so often know, is a path of deliberation.
Yeah.
It's a path of learning from your elders.
Yeah.
And these young guys. And so I think an internship where you take a young guy, mm-hmm. put him in an established church,
right.
and use that time there to train him up, to mentor him. Mm-hmm. And maybe he has the gifts. Maybe he has the well-rounded sort of the entrepreneurial spirit
right.
of operating somewhat in a vacuum without right. a lot of nearby supports.
What's the type of, can I ask this question? What's the type of person that is a planner? Is that answerable?
I think, again, if we sent two men,
yeah.
that question would be a lot less important.
Okay.
Because you could build teams.
Fair enough.
If we sent men to places where core groups have maybe officers there,
right.
an elder or a deacon, you don't need a guy who could figure out a church budget or right. do those sorts of things. Now, in our current situation.
Yeah, but most of those situations, I mean, yeah. I look across PCA, most of them aren't doing that.
Yeah.
So the personality, the person does factor into this, doesn't yeah. it?
One of the questions we've developed over the years to ask people is how do you handle adversity? Mm. And how do you handle uncertainty?
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned the attractiveness of going to an established church
yeah.
where you know you're going to be shepherded by the under shepherds, mm-hmm. by the elders. You're going to yep. be built up.
That's what
you're going
to be invested in. That's what I felt I needed.
And so, you know, you have to be comfortable kind of operating without a net a little bit. And it's scary, and there have been lots of moments of doubt and fear yeah. and uncertainty.
Yeah.
How do you deal with anxiety? Mm-hmm. You know, I think the marriage is important. What's your relationship right. with your spouse like?
Because, and what's your spouse like too? Yeah. Is she on yeah. board with this?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, she's a big factor in this whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. yeah. So I guess I asked that. I went into ministry. I've been in 20 years now. I think I've learned a few things, you know, I think,
yeah, absolutely.
But, I was highly ambitious.
Yeah.
You know, I thought I was going to come in and solve every problem. And this was an established church. I thought I was going to solve every problem, even though I had good elders.
Yeah.
I was taking on way too much myself. And I see a lot of young guys go into this and I think they're highly ambitious. I think godly ambition's good.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's right. I think you got to have it. But I worry about the very thing you said. When I first went in, I was beat down with some very severe conflict, even a suicide in the church.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And it you know, it almost ran me out of the ministry, right? But that was established church. I had good elders where I was leaning on. I just think in these situations with planners, we've got to do a good job, like you say, of helping them through, you know, what are your expectations going yeah. in?
Yeah.
I think expectations is a big discussion for them.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to be? And are you okay? Right. What about 3 years if this doesn't go?
Yeah.
Did you realize that might be possible? Right. I don't know what the yeah. percentages are of plants that make it and don't.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a fair concern.
Yeah. And you know, in 2019 in our church in DC, we got all the way to a congregational meeting considering closing the work down
yeah.
for lack of leadership at that time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, leadership officers is a necessary ingredient in the life of a healthy URC church, healthy Reformed church,
right.
Church, period. But in our model. So, you know, I think to have that support is so important, but it's a bit of a catch-22. And you mentioned yourself, you knew you needed to be in an established church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we're not going to send the really green guys out on the field, the problem is you get an established church and then you're asking an established guy to leave that security behind.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And
I know.
Practically, that's a very difficult thing to do. And I've mm-hmm. had that conversation, and there are some guys in the URC, you know, some of them mm-hmm. Who have done that just in recent years even. And I applaud those guys a ton. That's something I've never done, never will do, to walk away from an established church and to take up that call out of a passion for bringing the gospel to people outside an organized church. And so, I think that's where if we can build out the supports better, the uncertainty doesn't become a downside risk.
Right. Right.
You have to celebrate, well, God's calling me to this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people in my federation and my church who have my back.
Right.
And
that's so important.
And so right. I don't think, you know, uncertain, you're never going to get rid of the uncertainty. And mm-hmm. we could all say we trust God's providence and the sovereignty of God. But that's, you know, that's that's a hard thing to apply to real mm-hmm. life when you're talking yeah. about like a career path. Mm-hmm. So
do you think I like what you're saying about sending two.
Yeah.
I think there's so much wisdom in that, Brian. I think there's so much wisdom. Do you think there's a danger in a guy going out and doing a church plant? And this is the thing with church planning. It's so circumstantial, right? You could have the right sort of chemistry, the right moment, the right dynamics that come in this thing takes off in a way that,
yeah.
you know, may not in another situation. And in God's providence, that's how it goes, right? We yeah. can't figure that out. But I wonder, do you think there's a danger at times for a young church planner that since he's taking all this on himself without maybe another accountable partner in the work, that the plan gets built around him?
Yeah.
Too much? I've always wondered about that. I think
any church planter, that's a risk.
Yeah.
You know, some church planters say, well, our older model was only daughter churching, like sending people out from a larger church to a mm-hmm. neighboring community that's maybe a longish commute or something mm-hmm. like that. And I know that's happened even in this area, right? And
yeah.
And some people say, well, yeah, but we have to be bolder than that. We have to go into complete regions where there's no URCs mm-hmm. and do works at a distance. I'm sort of an all of the above guy.
You're an all above.
Okay. But a daughter church is a situation where I think that's the safest and we should pursue more of it. I think some of our large okay. churches should.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that very thing. I like that.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah. So I'm here in Escondido. You know, we've got a fairly large church.
Yeah.
We've planted Oceanside and Santee.
Yeah. Partly because you had people commuting there, right?
Yeah. From
there.
And they both worked, you know, yeah. there's been struggles, but, yeah. You know, they both are still in existence. Mm-hmm. I'm in the city of Escondido. We've got 150,000 here people. It's a lot of people, you know, not as much as down in San Diego, but you know, we have a fellow PCA here. We've got a few other small Reformed churches. You think we should be planning here? You think what's the strategy for a larger church that has a lot of resource? What do you think? I think I've always wanted to get some insight on this question from a church planner.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think our responsibility should be to help in this venue of church planning?
Yeah, venture? That's a great question. And so like, you know, this weekend, someone talked to me about the fact that Valley Center is growing.
It is.
You know, and I see a lot of construction in Escondido, right? Like
yeah.
the cost of living in San Diego mm-hmm. is driving people further out north yeah. in different directions. And so I think, you know, one of my visions for internship, and we have this in Classes East, and God blessed us with a church that sold its property, closed its doors, I think 20 years ago now,
right?
And dedicated the proceeds from that sale to the planting of churches in our classes. Mm-hmm. And so we have a fund over $1 million
yes,
that has really transformed things.
That's great.
That's a separate issue. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we established with that fund was church planting internships, anything from a summer internship to a year-long internship. And so what if a large church like this, you know, you might already have a number two, an associate. Mm-hmm. What if you said, and I think, again, funding helps, right? So our classes will pay half of this for one of our churches. Mm-hmm. So it's not super expensive.
Right.
But what if you took on an intern? And now maybe that intern, you mentor him. Maybe he serves in the church, but you use that additional manpower to either free up the senior or an associate pastor or the intern himself if he's cut out for it. Maybe there's an elder that lives out in Valley Center or that direction. And that elder has a vision for that. And so you take a year and you pray about it. Mm-hmm. But I think that intern provides an additional set of manpower resources, because you go to a church and you say, you should really be planting a church. It's like, all right, you have a full-time job,
yeah.
probably 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
It's not a good
yeah.
week, right? Where are you going to get the time to do that? Mm-hmm. Everyone is fully tasked out and you're asking them to do more.
Right.
Well, that's a great plan, but if you do more, you're going to do less of something else. I mean, yeah. life's a series of trade-offs. So at the end of the day, mm-hmm. it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen well unless we commit additional resources.
Right.
And
right.
I think additional resources at the exploratory stage, the deliberative stage, maybe nothing comes of it. But what if you had an elder in any direction from this church who has a 20 or a 30-minute commute, and they think, mm-hmm. well, there's a community 10 minutes the other direction.
Mm-hmm. And we do.
And you pray mm-hmm. about that. You take your time with it. You know, you go to classes, you talk to people, you say,
yeah.
we want to get in this game. We want to have, you know, you do a lot of mission work, you support mission works in lots of different
yeah.
ways, but we want to support this kind of home mission work.
Mm-hmm.
Use a young guy, and maybe he's the guy, maybe he's not,
yeah.
but that year of seasoning will teach him,
yeah,
will train him.
Really good, Brian. I think that's a really helpful suggestion.
And I think across the URC, if every classes could develop internship programs, give money to them so the money is sitting there, begging people to use it. Now, that's a recipe potentially for waste, so you have to put safeguards around it. You don't want to spend poor money. But by having a fund, we now are able to say, and I've said this to a bunch of young guys here at the seminary. I'm Chuck Tedrick's let me meet with some young guys this afternoon, which is a dangerous thing to let them meet with me. And I've said, like, we have this fund in Classes East.
Yeah.
It doesn't guarantee that there's a church in a position to do it, but it makes it easier.
Yeah.
You know, like, you want to tax things that you want less of and subsidize things you want more of. That's how you build policy. And a fund, a granting program, is a subsidy that encourages a behavior. So you create healthy incentives.
Right.
And I think across the Federation, across Reformed churches, we could think more about what kind of incentive structures are in place that we take for granted. So like I just said, we have incentive structures for old guys staying in their established churches, young guys going out and doing foolish things. That's a recipe for disaster. Let's change those incentives.
Yeah.